Welcome to Divine Intimacy Radio, a co-production of EWTN Radio and SpiritualDirection.com, where we provide you with a spiritual haven of rest and explore the riches of the wisdom of the saints and the path to union with God.
This is Dan and Stephanie Burke. Welcome to Divine Intimacy Radio, your radio haven of rest.
Your hermitage of the heart.
Your monastery of the mind, where we lift our hearts and minds to heavens to draw upon the wisdom of the saints to help us navigate the way to Jesus, the way to heaven, the way to life, the way to peace, freedom, joy in our vocations. We have a couple of folks to help us in this conversation about the very topic of singles, discernment, vocation, spiritual warfare, all that stuff. Who are these people?
They're former single people.
Oh, excellent. Yes.
That's what I have figured out.
Then they're uniquely qualified.
Absolutely. I think this is pretty cool. Steve and Becky Green present together and individually about theology of the body, marriage, family, natural family planning, and pro-life issues. A cradle Catholic, Steve is the director of Holy Family Institute of Catholic Faith and Life and host of Reasonably Rational, a YouTube podcast, and regularly writes and speaks on true masculinity, fatherhood, and modern philosophical errors. Becky is a former agnostic feminist. She writes and speaks on her conversion story, authentic femininity, and motherhood. She also homeschools her kids. The couple hosts the podcast Cradle and Convert, formerly known as The Catholic Conversation. Welcome, Steve and Becky.
Thank you,
Dan. Stephanie, thanks so much for having us on.
It's great to have you. Now, I'm remotely rational. I don't know how close that is to reasonably rational. So you'll have to forgive me on my proximity issues to being fully rational.
Reasonably irrational is an aspirational goal for me, Dan, that never attained, but always striven for.
Well, the human person has an infinite capacity for self-delusion, right?
So this one does anyway.
Yeah, well, I think everyone with a pulse. But let's talk about singles and vocation. I want to just begin with probably my greatest pain point related to this topic. As many folks know, we serve hundreds and hundreds of men, helping them discern the priesthood. We work in vocation development and priestly formation for more than 100 dioceses around the world. And there's one disease that seems to plague modern men, young men, discerning the priesthood. And I'd be interested in your perspective on the root causes, because it just pains me to watch. But the symptom is its seemingly inability to make a decision and run after a particular vocation. It's sort of do you see that problem out there, or is this just something we're experiencing in our neck of the woods?
No, without a doubt. And I suspect there are all kinds of reasons for it, and I'm sure it varies case to case with an individual young man. I think one of the biggest problems is the endless customizability of culture right now. Mm-hmm. There's so little stability, so little that's handed down that's permanent. And so I think it's kind of an every man for himself mentality. And then you add technology into the mix, and there's this constant temptation to upgrade. And if everything's always customizable and upgradable, it's hard to make a commitment to a single thing, because who knows, maybe tomorrow I want a different flavor or a different identity or a different career path or a different set of life choices. Years ago, actually, on our podcast, we interviewed a couple of young ladies, millennials, specifically on kind of that topic. And one of them said something that's just stuck with me since, you know, we being formerly young people ourselves, she said, "You have no idea what it's like to be us. Nothing is permanent. Nothing is stable. Everything is fluid." And in a sense, I think that can sound attractive in the initial pitch and proposal, but when you actually start living that, I think it's really difficult. So something like a vocation for a young man, I mean, once upon a time, there was sort of a series of commitments and traditions and rites of passage that just moved you naturally in the direction of a permanent decision that you were going to commit your life to and your masculinity to, a vocation that you were going to sacrifice for and suffer for and commit to. And that just, that all that seems to have been kind of washed away now. And there's sort of a drift in this, make up your own project, make up your own identity, make up your own values, make up your own life story sort of thing. And I don't think it's serving young men particularly well.
I think because also we don't have a script for them on what authentic masculinity even is. So that is a loss of identity and what they're innately meant to be rooted in understanding mission. And that can be, the same can be said for women. We don't actually know. It's not ingrained around us and in our experience, especially, it's in fact quite the opposite what the culture tells women who they are and what they're meant for. And so when you don't have that foundational understanding of just the meaning and purpose of the only two options, masculinity and femininity, you know, there's not this, you know, this entire bandwidth of possibilities of your identity as who you are. We are masculine, we are feminine. Each of those has very specific calls. Mm-hmm. And ultimately they speak to fatherhood and motherhood. And that vocation of priesthood is both, whether you're married, get married, or whether you are become a priest, those are rooted in this understanding of fatherhood. And many men, I think, just are lacking in even the fluency in what that means.
Yeah, it makes me think about beautiful Mother Louise Marie, one of our beautiful friends who is actually responsible for our marriage ministry. She's the one who kind of catapulted us into that call.
In brackets, forced.
Yeah, she did. So I love her. She's amazing. But she speaks about the crisis of being terminally unique, that we have a culture where everybody is terminally unique. I'm in this frozen place of, well, you know, we need a billboard sign. We need God to speak through the clouds and say, you, Stephanie, are called to be married and you must go forward and marry Dan Burke. It's really painful to watch. And I do have a tremendous empathy and compassion for our young people today. You know, we're raising young adults as well. And when we see that, it's just painful to watch because there is an endless plethora of information coming through the internet that's just wrecking us, wrecking our identity, wrecking what it means to be a woman, what it means to be a man, what it means to have a family. And then you add on to that all of the brokenness of our lives.
So I'm hearing, though, at its essence, it's a crisis of identity. Is that right?
I think so. You know, I would say with men too, tied up with the authentic masculine identity is inescapably the idea of self-sacrifice, which is a form of suffering. And we live in such a profoundly suffering averse culture, and not even just suffering averse. I think the bar is set even lower than that, even just discomfort aversion. It's this, the idea that you should always be comfortable. Everything should always be pleasant. Everything should always be to your taste, to your preference, to your liking. You should always be enjoying yourself. You should have kind of unlimited access to whatever pleasure you want at the moment. That is so antithetical to vocation in general. Certainly to marriage in general, but I think in a particular way to masculinity. You know, I always like to tell men, I say every man has a mission because manhood is a mission. It was created as a mission, as a great adventure, and in a sense as a battle. But that mission is to love and lead, serve and protect whoever has been entrusted to you in your vocation. And that's true whether you're a priest or whether you're a husband and father. But both of those vocations involve sacrifice, self-sacrifice. They involve suffering. They're not always comfortable. They're not always easy. They're not always pleasant. And they're fundamentally not about your tastes and your preferences and your pleasure. And so I think a culture that just constantly beats this drum of everything should be comfortable, everything should be pleasant. And if it's not, then get rid of that thing. Push that thing away, you know, edit those people out of your life, the people that challenge you or stretch you.
Oh, we didn't even shoot them.
Yeah, well, yeah. Right.
I'm not being funny, right? That's like the ultimate end.
Yeah, but it's rejecting your family. It's rejecting your family of origin. It's rejecting your parents, you know, everything.
Right? Fascinating. Fascinating. I had, you know, you're opening my mind. I came out of a family. Well, one, I've suffered tremendously my whole life in terms of abuse as a child, medical issues, life-threatening medical issues that I suffer with to this day, you know, all kinds of a mess. But so that's, you know, true. Then though, my dad, my biological father was a decent human being, had no understanding of how to, you know, deal with family, but he was a good provider, but he taught me how to work hard. He gave me a vision of manhood, which is go forth and conquer. And I don't care how you feel. And I don't care. Get up. It's time to go to work. It doesn't matter what the temperature is outside. It doesn't matter. He was an industrial contractor. It doesn't matter that it's pouring rain. None of it matters. What matters is your duty. That, I think, is the complete antithesis to everything you've just said, in the sense that that was a 50s mentality. I called my dad's generation 50s guys. That's a mentality that we've just completely lost. Am I right in that?
Yeah, I think so. To our great detriment, I think it's something that we've, and not just lost as an accident, I think we've rejected it intentionally, repudiated that whole vision of manhood and that whole vision of vocation. Yeah.
Yeah, I think sacrifice is so key, though. Mm-hmm. We look at Ephesians 5, you know, to become another Christ as Christ left the church, whether it's in marriage or marriage to the church, because either way, you have a bride, right, that you're sacrificing for. And so that mission, because if men don't have dragons to slay, if they don't have a higher understanding of who they are called to be, they are adrift,
and they become
to their senses
effeminate,
as Steve has said.
Yeah. And I don't mean effeminate. I don't mean like women. I mean the traditional use of the term is adverse to difficult, you know, hard work, that sort of thing. We're up against a break, guys. When we come back, we're going to continue talking with Steve and Becky Green about the challenges that young adults, singles face in discernment and a vocation and the related spiritual warfare issues around that. We'll be right back.
The beautiful fact that no suffering is wasted, that all suffering has a purpose, and to wrestle with the idea, which is that everything that happens in our lives is either willed or permitted by God. Okay, God, why would you permit these things? I know that you're a good father and you're a loving father, so there's something there. So I have to bridge this gap between your permission of my suffering to your love for me as a father. And Uniformity with God's Will, the book by St. Alphonsus Liguori, bridges that gap. And he explains, as only he can, because he's such a hard hitter, the reality that these are all moments of growth, of virtue, of, hey, your legs are weak. You're like a newborn deer. You can't stand on your own. We need to get you to stand on your own. You know, those sorts of things. Even desolation, you know, the day-to-day kind of the ebbs and flows of the spiritual life. Those things are all permitted for a greater good, whatever that might be.
Check out the brand new updated version of Uniformity with God's Will titled Finding Peace in the Storm with commentary by Dan Burke.
Dan Stephanie Burke. Welcome back to Divine Intimacy Radio. We're talking with Steve and Becky Green about singles, discernment, spiritual warfare, discernment of vocations. Steph, you wanted to talk to Becky about
the girls.
The girls.
Becky, so we've talked a lot about men needing a mission, and we're seeing a lot of women, young women, floating around as well. They're either looking for the spouse that never seems to manifest, or they're trying to discern endlessly if they're called to into religious life of some sort. Can you speak into that? What's going on with the girls on the other side, on the women?
Well, I think you mentioned mission when it comes to men, and women have a mission as well, but it's for many, many years, the culture has told them the mission is really to sort of step into the place of the man. And I think that's one of the challenges we as women face. And that goes all the way back to the garden. It goes back to when Eve, you know, circumnavigated her husband, who of course was nowhere to be seen. So he at that moment was not engaging in his mission, but she grasped for something that was not hers. And she's been grasping ever since. And we see this play out on so many different levels, second wave feminism, but feminism in general, I think has sort of encapsulated it best in just essentially telling women that you can do anything a man can do, and you can even do it better. And we start this really young with girls, with kind of the girl power and the you go girl kind of mentality. And Saint Teresa Benedict of the Cross said it best when she said, there is a little bit of Eve in every woman, and she must make her way from Eve to Mary. And this is an ongoing life journey, I think, for all of us. But when you face that reality that we all have this infection of Eve's temptation, that and men all have that little bit of Adam in them, this is a dynamic that's constantly playing out in the courtship world, out in marriages, in the discernment. And it's hard to know what does it actually even mean to be authentically feminine, to live out this mission of my call. And when we look and we see this Marian vocation, what it is to be like Mary, it seems almost impossible. Well, she's conceived without any original sin. So she's got that going for her. She was married to a saint and she had the perfect child, literally. So it's, you know, like it seems like to live out something like that and try to emulate her femininity seems almost impossible. But I think there's just some practical things that as women, if we stop and look at how often we don't understand how to live out what it means to be authentically feminine in relationship to our God, in relationship to men, and in relationship to other women, then it can constantly feel like we're fighting this uphill battle of not even knowing what we're supposed to do. Where are the good men? What am I, you know, I've got to do everything. I can tell you a story of just an example of this that really was an aha moment for me. Is I was out at a soccer field and I was pushing a big stroller. I had children hanging off my face. I had lots of, you know, things all over the place. So I was really kind of managing a lot of things. And a man turned around, he was walking with his wife and he said, "Wow, you've got your hands full," classic line. And I said, "Yeah." And then the woman said, "I really like that stroller." And I immediately began complaining about it. It was just sort of this casual conversation to sort of gripe about, well, it's great, but there's this one part underneath that just kind of drags on the floor. It's not that great. And she jumped in right away in front of her husband and said, "Oh, must have been invented by a man." And I realized that default setting of women in how they relate to men and understand men and speak about them and to them, we all suffer from it, even when we become intentionally aware of trying not to do that. And that affects how men are able to relate to us. And I think that's a lot of what we're seeing in the culture today in terms of women trying to find good men and good men trying to find good women. We don't actually know how to speak the language because we don't really understand what our mission is from the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah. So what you're describing is we have warfare on both sides.
Yes. For
tremendous
sure.
Warfare working against us. You know, it's the guys are against me, you know, women, we're all against the guys, everybody's defective. Yep. We're never going to find anybody right. Yep.
And who's the author of all that?
Satan.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's not the Lord. It's right. Not the Lord. Right.
Fascinating.
He started in the beginning in the garden. It was the serpent who first tempted Eve, and he's been doing it ever since.
That's
Becky,
right.
You said something very powerful, striking line. I don't know if it's yours or you quoted it from somewhere. We have every woman has a little bit of Eve in them and they need to make their way to Mary.
Yeah, Teresa Benedict of the Cross.
Oh, it's she done. Said that.
Yeah.
Ah.
She just beauty. Yes, I'd love to take credit for that, but no, it was a saint.
Yeah.
And I mean, I hang on that one big time because we as women, we're really only taught to reject our femininity or exploit it. But we're never really taught to embrace it. And that's kind of the biggest thing for me that has been my journey from what I was taught by the culture and the default setting to becoming authentically Catholic in my womanhood as a woman, as a daughter of God, as a wife to my husband, and as a mother to my children, and as a friend.
Both of you are slated to speak at our Spiritual Warfare in the Family Summit, July 23rd through 25th. Folks can register at registration.spiritualdirection.com, or you can just go to spiritualdirection.com and look at the events page for any of our events. What is the role of the demonic in all of this confusion?
Yeah, that's a great question. And one that I think we would all do well to think more about and more intentionally about. I would say, first of all the fallout around us, I think in some sense is the gradual working out and the inevitable trajectory of the sexual revolution. And of course, as we all know, it's a sexual revolution that somewhere along the way morphed into an anthropological revolution. It began as theoretically about, you know, what we do with our libidos and our relationships and our sex lives. But it has become a revolution about who and what we are, even as human beings. And there's a tremendous confusion that to me has always spoken to the spiritual warfare aspect of it, because the reality is this was Satan's revolution from the beginning. And I think that's also highlighted by the fact that you see some of the, you know, 1960s sexual revolutionaries that are still around are looking at where that revolution has gone in present day and are bewildered by it. They're like, wait, this is not what we intended. Someone hijacked our revolution. It's like, no, this was never your revolution to begin with. And the point there being, Satan attacked sex because he knew that if he can twist sex, he can break marriage. If he can break marriage, he can break families. If he breaks families, he breaks children. If he breaks children, eventually he breaks men and women and the human person altogether. He knew exactly where this was going. And so all of these false narratives about masculinity, femininity, this deep fear of commitment and marriage and vocation, this aversion to suffering, that is absolutely spiritual warfare, front to back, top to bottom. That is Satan twisting and twisting and twisting our understanding of who we are, what we're made for, what we're called to, how we're meant to love. And with all those counterfeit versions out there, then he can just continually drag people away from the truth and into those errors.
You know, I'd like to add one thing to the front of your list of cascading destruction, and that is that if the enemy can distort what authentic love and sexual relationship looks like, he can distort and destroy our understanding of what it means to be in union with God. Mm-hmm. That then sets free all of the destructive,
yes,
right,
subsequent cascading problems.
Yeah, because we know that the church uses the beautiful, perfect marital union to help us understand what does it mean to pray,
to be
in union with God.
Yeah.
Right. So if he can destroy our relationships,
yeah,
in marriages, male and female, then we are no longer self-giving. Perfect selflessness goes away. Mm. There's no authentic giving and receiving of love, which is what we're called to. That is the Trinity, the perfect selfless giving and receiving of love. So it becomes, you know, a society of taking.
Yeah.
I take from you.
Yeah.
I take it. I don't give it to you. I take it.
You know, one of the antidotes, it seems to me, and of course, if you give a carpenter a hammer, that's what he'll use to try to solve everything, not picking on good carpenters. But if you have a hammer, everything's a nail, you know. But for me, when I think through this and the effect, and even looking back on some of the guys that I've tried to work with and help to some success and some and abysmally in others, is the enemy works through desolation and lies. Mm-hmm. And what you've been talking about, Steve and Becky, is the lies of the culture. But I think if we can get guys more deeply oriented, one, to prayer, women, men and women both, but I don't work with women, to a deeper orientation to authentic prayer, a deeper orientation to understanding desolation, which tends to drive people to try to resolve that pressure in destructive ways if they follow the lies of the culture. But if they understand the spiritual movements of desolation and consolation, they can begin to unravel, this pathway is formulated by the enemy. Yeah. Because it always leads from darkness to darkness, and this pathway is formulated by God, because it always leads me out of darkness into light and liberation. So anyway, I don't, it, this is all, you know, I'm sort of experimenting and talking to myself and wondering about how, because we're, you know, obviously we work so deeply with formation of men in particular. We also have a gap year program here at the Retreat Center on 64 beautiful acres in Montgomery, Alabama, where we help men and women kind of, you know, bridge over these barriers to their calling and what God has for them. Maybe, you know, we're getting close to the end of this show, but I think we have to turn a corner, but we need to maybe do the second show is how do we help? So we've really defined a lot of the problem, but I think more important is how do we get to a solution? So friends, we've been talking with Steve and Becky Green. They'll be speaking at our Spiritual Warfare in the Family online summit, July 23rd to the 25th. You can find out more at spiritualdirection.com. And if you're looking for more from them, you can check out their podcast, Reasonably Rational, and their joint podcast called Cradle and Convert. Formerly it was the Catholic Conversation, to dig a little bit deeper into the wisdom that they bring to this conversation about how we draw more deeply into the identity that God's called us to, live in that identity and the freedom of that identity. So in our next segment, we're going to open with how do we get to that freedom? How do men get to the freedom of understanding their identity?
Where did we start?
Where do we start? And then how do women get to that freedom? And how can we as parents help them when they're younger? And then as formators later on, when they're working on the most serious questions in life, help them to see a pathway forward. Thanks for being with us today, Steve and Becky.
Thanks for having us.
Until next time, may the God of peace make you perfect in holiness. May he preserve you whole and entire, spirit, soul, and body, irreproachable at the coming of our Lord, Jesus Christ. Amen.
Learn more about the interior life. Visit spiritualdirection.com. Divine Intimacy Radio is a co-production of EWTN Radio and spiritualdirection.com and heard worldwide on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.